Welcome to the ShadowNet, everyone! Before we get going here, a little threat level alpha, there's gonna be swearing. Beckett, don't tell your mom you listen to shit. Today we have a special guest, bronze medalist at Intercontinentals, and World's 2020 hopeful, Eric!
Thank you very much for having me again.
You're welcome, it's always a treat when you come on the show.
Absolutely. How about that theme song?
Oh my god, it's so good. We're
turning that
blessed.
Turning that ad money into, like, you know, we're producing content now.
Yeah, exactly. We're for real. Custom, or I should say, bespoke theme song by the one and only DJ Freaking, aka Marcus.
He's a member of my local meta. Really great guy. It was like a really big offer of him to like be willing to do this, and we definitely owe him one.
He's absolutely
played Netrunner. He's been playing Netrunner for about like 3 or 4 years now.
Like him as a player. He plays like janky nonsense. Love it.
The thing I like about him is like he's a data scientist, and his approach to Jake is really interesting. Where he's like, "Listen, I'm gonna play like this quote unquote bad idea, but I'm gonna like actually really refine it down." I think that's I really respect that. Like he is really sort of like, even though he's building quote unquote jank, he's like, "I'm gonna make the best jank I can," which is like.
That's a smart way to do jank.
Yeah, yeah. So there have been two major tournaments since we last talked.
It's been 2 weeks since we recorded, which seems like an eternity because the last couple episodes were just a week apart. Unreasonably close together.
So NA Continentals. You played in NA Continentals.
I did.
Tell me about that.
Okay. So, like we talked about how I prepped last time, right? Grind out a corp, get real comfortable with it. The night before, decide on a runner. Having to submit deck lists like a day before was really tough. But I ended up on an Apoc Quetzal. I won a couple games, so I was happy with it. And as corp, I've been playing a ton of SSO. We lost that Kayambe grid, which was a big blow to the unassailable server. But I replaced that cleverly with a Mwanza City grid, just for some credits to help me punitive some runners.
And how did the day go in terms of like play and match? Like, did you have a good time?
I had a great time. So I don't know about you. I mean, we chatted a bit that like I have a family and stuff, so I can't just usually take a whole day to play Netrunner. So it was really a treat for me to just be able to do this all day. I'll tell you how I did. Because I made a little exercise chart here. Get fit for worlds. Game loss is 20 push-ups. Credits lost to doof times 10 is squats. Flatline,
God.
20 crunches. Someone installs Rezeki on you, do some leg raises. Stuff like that. So I split round 1 and 2. Fair. Okay. Mm-hmm. Round 3, just complete loss. I don't remember who I'm playing here. That's too bad. Mm-hmm. 4 split, 5 split, 6 split. Round 5 was against Laura Osclate. She's a good time.
Laura's so nice.
She was having a bad day though, because she met me way down at table like 50.
Yeah, I think she had trouble. Like, I mean, I was working with her on deck lists.
Yep.
And I think one of the things is she sort of struggled in the end to like find lists that she really liked. So I think that might have been like why she was not having a great day. But she like she said she was having a good day after, like, even though she didn't like perform exceptionally.
Yeah. No, I mean, you could still have fun, and I totally did. Everyone I played was fantastic. And then round 7. So I'm down one win from parity. So
okay.
I need to do for one. I need to 2-for-1 to get those Anansies, which is it's really exciting for me, Eric. I know you're always in the cut. You're 2-for-1 in. You're intentionally drawing.
No.
All the time. It's just normal for you. Us little people, we don't get to do that. So it's exciting for me typing to my opponent, "Hey, we got a 2-for-1 this last round."
Oh yeah.
So we can be in the bottom or the top. You're trying to?
I'm trying to empathize. No, I'm trying to like put myself in the shoes of someone who doesn't make cut all the time. Like it's like I'm trying.
Yeah, role play so with me.
Yeah, I'm role playing. Okay, yeah. So I'm playing bad decks.
Yes.
I'm in the bottom half.
Yeah, but you're so close to the top.
But I'm so close to the top half. And all I care about is the Earth Station. All I care about is the Earth Station. All I need is top half. So I talked to my opponent about this tech I've heard some people use, 2-for-1.
Yes.
And I offer it to him. And does my opponent accept?
They do. And, oh, they do. I was going to get him. I have no idea who it was. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to get this 2-for-1. I'm in the corpse spot. It's going to go my way. And then, boom, repaired. I get paired up against this mythical beast, the Manticore. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. We're at, like, table 45. There's no way this guy is better than me. I offer the 2-for-1. Oh, I just get, like, I got smoked out of the water. This, like, exercise sheet gets, like, all filled up. I've got, like, 80 squats to do after. And then we play a ceremonial second game and just, like, blown out again. So it wouldn't even matter. The 2-for-1 didn't
matter.
That's
a rookie mistake. That's a rookie mistake, you know? If I offer 2-for-1 and I lose the first game, I never play the second. It's too demoralizing, you know?
But it was the last one of the day. Like I said, I don't get to play Netrunner all that much too often.
No, for sure.
So everyone had fun. I think our last game was on a stream because there was a bunch of spectators at the end. Not the official Nisei stream, but one of the other ones that was covering it.
One of the side streams.
Yeah. The first game was actually really good. He was on Asa.
You're famous now.
I'm famous. People listen to this. I'm just saying,
like, yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's why you got on stream, because you're famous now.
Oh, yeah, I see. They probably saw that. So I had a really good time with Continentals. I know a lot of other people did. You were busy commenting on the main Nisei stream.
Yeah, I forget even when I did commentary. Like, I'm trying to actually think. I did commentary at some point. I'm like, it's such a blur.
I think I did. You were at least in the finals.
No, I think I did the final. Yeah, because I was playing Twilight Imperium during the day on Saturday. So I couldn't commentate.
Of course you were.
So I was like, oh yeah. So I did Sunday. I commentated Sunday. Yeah, I think I did the last, like, I did the last four games. So starting from, like, losers semis all the way to grands.
Okay.
It was good. It was,
some good net running.
It was good games. The IDs surprised me in some sense.
Okay.
So, like, before we get into this, I want to make one comment. That exercise sheet, did I hear you right? It's 10 squats for every credit you lose to Doof.
Yeah.
So if you get doofed once in a game, you gotta do 50 squats.
See, but this is where being a bad player is helpful. If I'm on, like, 2 credits, that's just 20 squats.
Oh, I see. I didn't consider that. Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was teching for it.
Did you have, going into Continentals, did you have any ideas about what would be, like, did you have any sort of, like, preconceptions about what might be played?
I thought it'd be close to what we'd seen in the other two. So a lot of Leela, probably still on a 419. You popularized, what's his face? Freedom, yeah. Quite a bit. I saw a lot of Leela, and other than that, I don't think I saw any Freedom. I saw 419 a couple times. It was a lot of Krim, predictably.
So, like, if you look at the field, a quarter of the field was Leela.
Yeah.
419 was about 9%, and then if you combine Freedom and Hashit go together, sort of like Reg Anarch was 25%. Yep. So it's like basically 25% Reg Anarch, 25% Leela, then there's some Geist, some 419, and then it's just like a bunch of other runner IDs.
Yep.
If you look at the corpse side, it's kind of interesting. Asa was like incredibly underplayed. There's 9 Asas were played at the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 6.7% of the field. Outfit was the most represented corp at 20%, so a fifth of the field.
Yep.
CTM GameNet made up about 18%, and then it's kind of just like I think the big takeaway from the corpse, the runner side did not surprise me that much. I thought there would be more Reg Anarch because it's Americans love playing Anarch.
Yep.
I thought Leela would be really popular because Leela's really good. On the Corp side, I did think Titan was really underrepresented. I thought there'd be more Titan players, for sure.
Again, it's the decks people are more comfortable with, right? So the outfit's been really strong for a long time. So I wasn't surprised that was so represented.
I just think that, like, there's a lot of Titan players in... I think there's, like, when Titan was underplayed at Euros, I was like, that kind of makes sense to me because historically people don't like playing Titan there.
Yeah.
In America, like, especially the New York meta, the Titan is, like, more represented. Like, Titan is more popular, which...
Yeah. And they did good. I think a couple of Titans got to the top cut.
So, like, when I was actually, like, kind of involved in the prep for this tournament because three of our people were prepping for this tournament.
Yep.
Which was Ranji, Dodge, Kisra, and Analyze Chris. And
so people being your testing group.
Yeah. Snare Bears. And so, in the end, Analyze Chris and Kisra both made top 16 on Titan Freedom. Because we thought the Freedom deck was really good, and the Titan deck we thought was really good, too. But Titan was just underplayed in the field, we thought. But if you like, think of it like this. So Asa, how many Asas made top cut? 1, 2, 3, 4. So of the nine Asas that showed up for the tournament, 5 of them made the top 16, and 3 of them were in the top 4. You know, it seems to me, if you think of the top cut as, like, in theory should be representing the quantity of an ID showing up in the cut should represent percentage-wise the quantity of an ID played in the general field. So, for example, if a quarter of the field brought Leela, you should expect, in theory, a quarter of the top 16 runners to be Leela.
If all IDs are the same strength, then good.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is then if an ID is overrepresented, we can say that ID overperformed. And if an ID is underrepresented, we can say it's underperformed. So let's say, like, if Leela was 25% of the field, but 75% of the runner IDs, then the takeaway is Leela's fucking insane. I think in this case, the takeaway is that Asa massively overperformed. Like,
Asa's pretty great.
Well, Asa's great, but it was Asa, like, I think it's a combination of Asa's really good and Asa was extremely underplayed in the United States.
I think there's a little bit of bias here. You know, there's only a certain number of players that will have the time to, like, pivot to it, practice it, understand the deck at a level to be comfortable enough to play it after, like, a week in a tournament, rather than bring in just whatever they've been playing before that.
Sure, but there have been, like, people like Cody and Sid, for example, have been playing Asa for the past year.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I mean, I agree with you. I just don't... So you're saying the reason Outfit was so played was just because it was, quote-unquote, what people were comfortable.
I think so, and it's just, it's generically strong. Okay, you're going to say, like, most decks are shit. I can see this coming. But it's like...
No.
It works well together. It, you know, it's got understandable paths to victory. It's like a solid deck, but it's not like the big brain Asa deck that has a million moving parts.
Sure. No, I agree with that partially. I do think there is something to be said that, like, the Outfit is more straightforward than the Asa, and you want to play a straightforward Corp deck in, like, a 7-round tournament.
Yeah.
I also think that part of the reason why the Outfit was brought was because it was believed to have a good Freedom matchup.
Oh.
I think there was a belief that a lot of more people would be on Freedom because of, the Reg Anarch thing. I think people knew, like, for example, that the Snare Bears were going to bring Freedom. 3 of the 4 of the Snare Bears that played brought Freedom. I think the Outfit was a response to Freedom generally because the Freedom doesn't have a good Leela matchup. Huh. You know? Like, it does... I don't think the Outfit has a good Leela matchup, but Leela ended up being a quarter of the field. That's why I think the Outfit, like, didn't do very well. There's only two outfits made top 16.
Our boy, you know? Will Soak brought the Outfit. He did good.
You were right. Will made top 16. It was excellent.
Yeah. Go, Will.
Well, I thought if there was a Canadian who was going to win it, it was going to be Will.
I thought that too. Had you ever heard of Sid 7?
No. It's interesting. I know very little about the Vancouver meta.
Keith's out of Vancouver.
I know Keith and then Ian, whose username is a very dumb brick. I stayed with him at Worlds. And so, like, it's tough because I've never really been to that part of the country in my life. I think they kind of keep themselves. I knew some players from there, but no, I had no idea who Sid was. And, like, in the post-champ interview talking to him, this was like his first major tournament win. Like he had was like had not been in like a cut above the store champ level or something.
Yep. Yeah, it was his first time in a cut, which was like just amazing, right? That he took first. I just want to pause here and let's celebrate. Canada wins again, predictably.
Canada, that's a 3-for-3.
3-for-3.
3-for-3. Like, Canada actually notching the NA win is so insane.
so happy. I was really scared there. A lot of non-Canadians in the cut.
Oh, well, I think America's washed up.
We've covered this.
You know what I mean?
We've covered
this. Well, they are. But, like, no. There's a difference between conjecture, but now we have cold, hard facts, which
the
is America's
proof is in the cut,
scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to tell you something that was so funny. So, I think it was Euros, or maybe it was like the NA. I was commentating, and I was basically being like, "Hey, listen, the United States, like Sid's doing so well. The United States sucks at Netrunner," which is like it is kind of a meme. Like, but like you know, I don't actually hate the United States. Well, I do hate the United States.
The only people pushing this meme is us two.
yeah. The only people pushing this meme are us two, and I like Americans. I have many American friends, but
your whole testing group is American.
Yeah. I love Americans. I just don't like your government. So I'm like, oh, the United States sucks at Netrunner, blah, 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 blah. And I was like reading the Twitch chat and someone was like, very good joke, but Canada has like very big issues with residential schools and like indigenous issues. And like they need to like, you know, Canadians aren't exactly perfect either. And I was like, dude, come on. Like,
it was funny. We acknowledge this, but that's, I mean,
No, I agree. I just think it's, God. Like, that's it's funny. It's just, yeah. It's so funny. I think there are some people who take it, like, a little personally, which, like, you know.
Eric,
I mean,
if you're going to dish it out on stream, you got to be prepared to get some of it back.
No, I just think it's, like, you know, instead of getting mad, you could win more Netrunner tournaments. That's all I got to
say. Oh, okay, there we go, yeah.
But it was so funny. Oh, it was so funny.
I appreciate you being the heel on the Nisei Street.
I have a little bit of regret about that.
No, it was good. Let me explain this. Like, the only reason people care about sports is because there's these storied legacies. And it doesn't matter what sport. Yeah, rivalries, what have you. And the famous example of, like, exploiting this is professional wrestling, where the term heel comes from, I think, which is, like, an intentional bad guy in order to, like, craft stories around the matches, because maybe wrestling isn't that interesting to start with. I don't know. I don't really watch it.
No.
But
people like stories. People like stories.
Yeah. What you brought to the stream was a little bit of that playful antagonism, which maybe some people didn't receive as well as they could have. It brought a lot of life to it, you know? Because, like, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Andre, Pat, excellent commentators, but, you know, you got a full day, no, 2 days of Netrunner. It drags on a little bit. Put a little spice in there. Craft a story. Oh, here's big bad guy, White Blade, scooping up Australians. Now he's back on the stream shit talking. It was great.
Yeah, I did kind of regret it. I think I got a message from Nisei that was basically like, you need to tone it down a bit.
Yeah.
Which, like, I can understand because, like, it's their, like, their, like, you know, it's, like, their official stream.
Yes. You want to keep it clean.
Keep it clean. Well, yeah. Keep it clean. But, like, so I kind of, you know, the point, it's just trash talk, you know. And so, like, we'll get to this later when we talk about Intercontinentals. But, like, when I got fucking yeeted out of Intercontinentals cut, like, I got put on blast of it. And I can live with that, you know. But no, I think it's like, it's just friendly trash talk, and like, rivalries are good. If you wanna keep complaining, try and beat me then. I don't know what to tell you.
There we go. The message is out.
So, yeah, I thought to me, there are two big stories coming out of NA Continentals.
Yeah.
Okay. The first, you can play whatever the fuck you want if you're good at Netrunner, is what I learned. Some of these decks, like, are interesting, I would say.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. Like, a lot of them are sort of, like, not what we think is correct, but like more like personal choices, but people kept excelling on them. If you had told me that the Acer deck to win NA Continentals would be punitive tier, I would not have believed you. Tier won in NA Continentals. Like, yes. It's fucking... anything can happen.
Which, I have a point to make here. You interviewed... Mm-hmm. His name is Jason, right? Sid 7?
Yeah, I think his name's Jason.
Yeah, I think it's Jason. You interviewed him after he won, and he explained where these decks came from, which is he's been playing Asa for sort of like months and just like refining it.
Yeah, he's been refining it.
Yeah. And like the day before the tournament, I think he was on Leela, and he switched over to Hoshiko like, oh, this is going to be better. You know whose tournament prep that reminds me of?
Yeah, it's true. Why didn't you win Continentals?
Because I'm bad at Netrunner. Is the difference.
For sure.
I'm just saying to everyone
it's
out
possible.
There, you know, the White Blade school of tournament prep is not the only one.
No, I never said that.
No, but I think people have to know those options.
I think, like, I agree. I think, like, definitely it's better to play a deck that you feel, like, really comfortable on and is, like, quote-unquote, a bit worse than the best deck. Like, I think we talked about this before, but, like, a threshold of goodness that your deck needs to meet. But then, like, because in my opinion, what's driving this deck is, like, it's the same thing that's driving every Acer deck, which is, like, Fully Op, Cybernetics, like, Jeeves, Mumba, the Ice Suite. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that, it's, like, there's, like, 30 cards that are the same. The last 19 are like, you know, the spice that he really likes. So I think that it doesn't matter even if like it's not accepted as quote unquote good. Like he made it work and like it may be really good.
Yeah. And the few different cards here there open up different lines of play, right? Like if you need to play around tier, that's a lot different than dealing with like Drafter.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a lot of 2-for-1 in this too.
Well, I know I did one.
Well, yeah, I know, but I'm just saying like I was actually looking at the tournament. There's a lot, like more than you would think.
You can see that. Good job with the data integrity here.
I saved screenshots of all the Cobra rounds.
Oh, nice.
But like, there's a lot of 2-for-1, and there was a lot of 2-for-1 early. So traditionally, it's a 7-round tournament. You see 2-for-1 happen in the last 2 rounds. Mm-hmm. But like, a lot of people were 2-for-1 by round 4 and 5.
Just so they could ID to victory.
No, because they were like they just wanted to get their chances. They wanted like, you know, you're X and 3 by round 4. Yeah. So now you have to, if you lose another game, you're mathematically out, so you just gotta keep playing.
Oh, gotcha.
I don't know. It's kinda interesting. I've never really I think this is not an official stance. I do think the 2-for-1s are kind of starting to warp tournament results a bit in large tournaments.
It can be an official Shadow Net stance.
Yeah, an official... Yeah, you're right. So this is not a stance of Eric Keelback, but this is a stance of the Shadownet. The Shadownet believes that 2-for-1s are warping tournament play in large tournaments. I mean, I think it's bad for, like, a couple of small reasons. I think it's, like, people are playing less Netrunner. It distorts tournament results and gives us a less good pitch. Like, one of the goals of tournament play is to sort of, like, reveal who we think is the best player. Like not tournaments aren't perfect at that, but that's like an aspirational goal tournaments have. And so, you know, if it's distorting the results, it hurts that goal. But I do think that it's like the 2-for-1-ing thing is it's incentivized by the structure of the tournament. You can't keep the same tournament structure and ban 2-for-1s. It's impossible. I don't have a problem with 2-for-1. I have a problem with 2-for-1s, but I think like you can't just ban 2-for-1s. What you need is actually a different tournament structure. And
did you 2-for-1 during Australians?
No, I did not.
Oh, you're too good for it. Dang.
I have in the past personally. Like, yeah. I don't have a problem with 2-for-1. I just think it might be worth investigating other tournament formats, really putting our heads together and questioning maybe some of the fundamental ideas about how Netrunner tournaments are run.
And I've seen a lot of chat about people starting to talk and think about this a lot more. Obviously, Nisei did some thinking with the format for Intercontinentals.
Yeah, it was single-sided Swiss, kind of like Battle Royale style. Like, everyone had 3 lives, and then... So you had 3 losses. You got your 3rd loss, you were knocked out.
Yeah, I thought as a spectator, at least, I thought that was, like, super hype. I thought it was great.
I think it's really good as, like, a spectator format. Like, that's how I felt about it in some sense. Like, because I did feel that the Intercontinentals in some sense were, like, a show match. Well, like, yeah. A series of show matches. I mean, there was obviously something on the line and, like, QVM, like, incredible accomplishment, especially because the field was just stacked. I was looking at the chart of people who played in this tournament, and I was going to be like, we should, like, shout some people out, like look at the best players. But really, I think, like, give or take, there's pretty much everyone here is, like, exceptionally really strong. Like, I hadn't really thought about it until now, but that field was stacked.
Well, yeah, it's the all-stars of current Netrunner, yeah. At least. Obviously, the top 16 from every region. You're going to have some big names in there.
Yeah. And so this format was single-sided Swiss, so it was like a 40-minute round. You only played one game. It was like sort of like cut rules where like you tried to play the game side you had least. So like if you had played Corp two times, Phil, and I'd played Corp once, I would run instead to try and like even it out.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but so that was the format. I didn't, as a spectator, you enjoyed it.
I definitely liked it, yeah. For one, obviously, the level of play you were saying was just excellent. So they're all very good matches from the get-go. Plus, you know, just the whole format of it was really exciting with the, like, three losses. And, you know, it separated out pretty fast, which I could see an in-person tournament that really falls apart really quick because, like, half the people aren't playing after three rounds.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it made uniquely sense for an online tournament because, like, if you got knocked out, you could just be like, okay, I'm going to go, like, do laundry or something. Like,
yeah. I agree with you. Maybe for Worlds, you know, the amount of two-for-one-ing and IDing, there could be something there, but maybe the Swiss-to-cut format we have is, like, the least worst format. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to talk about these things.
Well, like, I'm not smart enough either. I think there are, like, data scientists and, like, people who, like, are good at, like, Jens
Get Marcus Skaren. On this.
Marcus, like, Jens Skaren, I know him as Jeff, but he's from, I want to say Texas, but I know he's not. He's from Boston. He's, like, was doing some analysis on, like, creating a tournament structure. And I like, the way I feel about it is, like, if we can come up with a tournament structure that, like, satisfies some goals, we should try it out.
Yeah.
I did spend a good chunk of time prepping for this tournament. Because after Well, I basically went to the Snare Bears and I was, like, because I was the only Snare Bear who had made a top 8. I was basically, like, you know, I think by the time we started, people were like, we'll help you. But I think, you know, people were starting to get a little burnt out just because
so much Netrunner in the last month. It's hard to keep up.
So I had, I talked to them, like, hey, I need decks because we were like, what do we think people are going to bring? We thought Acer was popular. And I wanted to play the Freedom. Mm-hmm. I think the problem with playing the Freedom is we thought GameNet was, like, we were like, the GameNet decks we thought were actually kind of good. And so we were like, we can't make the Freedom GameNet matchup work for Freedom. Like, we just think that we have to play a different deck. And so Jonas, God bless his heart, he was basically like, I got these two lists. I got Apoc Ashiko, and I have Hard Hitting News, Boom, Acer. And he was like, these are busted. You should play them. I was like, okay, I'll try them out. And they were busted. Like, the Apoc Ashiko list was really good. I'd spent a lot of the last MWO playing Apoc decks.
Yep.
And so I felt comfortable on it. I felt like it had a good matchup spread. It's like, I really enjoy playing Apoc Anarch, and I feel really strong on it. So it made a lot of sense to me, especially because I felt like it had a good Acer matchup, which is something I wanted.
Yep.
It had a good shot against GameNet. Like, it wasn't a slam dunk, but it was like you could win those matchups.
That's why I also landed on Apoc in an almost as good ID. Quetzal. Yeah, but yeah, that was my reasoning. Hey, they're going wide. You know, centrals will be less defended. Let's just Apoc the whole thing.
Bro, the problem was we were like, it's really hard to beat Titan.
Yeah.
But we also thought no one would bring Titan, you know? Like, I thought I was the only one who might have brought Titan. And on the day of, it turned out nobody brought Titan.
Not even you.
No, not even me.
Sad news for Titan.
It was 6-9. It was like 11 out of 24, it was like 11 Acers. Well, we can just look at the Yeah, so it was 10 Asa. So 40% of the field was Asa, 25% of the field was game net. Then it was like a Palana, like a bunch of different corp decks. On the runner side, it was 10 people brought like Reg Anarch, which is Freedom Mashiko. Mm-hmm. 10 people brought Criminal, which is Leela Geist. And then it was a bunch of like random IDs.
I'm quite sad Kenny, aka Simon Moon, didn't stick with his Apoc Haley deck. That thing was just like came out of nowhere, to me at least, and I was like, oh, this is so cool. Reppin' Shaper, doing great.
Whoa.
And Apoc in there for some reason. It's awesome.
Well, Encoder got sixth, and he was on Apoc Haley.
Oh, really?
I do think what surprised me was the Palanas did very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Rotom got second, Labs got ninth, and then QVM was on Egg Infusion, which is like Jinteki Glacier.
Yep.
And he got first.
Yeah, I remember seeing quite a bit of those games, and those decks did well, which is a surprise because we hadn't seen much Jinteki since the last rotation.
MWL,
I should say.
Yeah. I ended up on Hardening Boom Asa, which was like, I didn't know how to play the deck very well.
Yeah, it's a little different.
I was bad at it. Like, I was not good. And then, like, I remember the day before, I was like, okay, I don't know how to play this deck. And he gave me some points. Jonas gave me some pointers. I was like, I'll play it, whatever. Like, it's too late to switch. And I think it was fine. It got me a lot of, like, on the day of the tournament, it went 3-0 initially, and then it went 3-3. Like, I lost two games with it. But the first three games I won were before Decklist Republic. And so I got a lot of wins by people just sort of like being aggressive and then them dying the Hardening Moons.
Yeah, you know? It's Regas, Asa, just run. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's Hardening Moons. Whoops.
And so people were like, once the Decklist were like, I had to play with public Decklist against QVM twice.
Mm-hmm.
And he deserved, I think, both those wins. Like, I was not good at playing the deck. He was obviously very good at playing the Leela. And, like, he knew what I was doing, and I was, like, did not know what I was doing. I did really well at first. I went 6-0 undefeated, and then I lost three games in a row.
You still ended up third. That's good. That's excellent. Yeah,
I mean,
you're like, oh, I started off really good, and then, yeah, it all went to shit. I ended up third. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, I think it was interesting, the finals, the final bit was interesting, because I knew, so like this TI meme was like a thing, like so this whole meme during the tournament was, I was basically like, I booked TI for like 2:00
yeah,
on the Saturday, and I was like, I'm going to play. And so I think like by the time I started my last game, I was like, I had the laptop like balanced on my knee.
Uh-huh.
And I was playing the game while I was trying to set up my pieces on the board.
Oof.
And it was just like, I have kind of regrets. I think I should have conceded. Like, it was kind of like, it was an embarrassing loss, I think, in some sense. I was like just playing like an absolute idiot.
You didn't know the decks, and you were like half-heartedly playing.
Yeah, like it was like,
doesn't sound like top tier Netrunner to me.
Well, no, I should have just dropped. Like, I should have like just been like, you whatever QVM, you got it. But like, I did sort of have like 5 minutes of like remorse where I was like, oh, I could have won it. You know, like not that I could have won it, but that like, oh, I should have done better. Oh, yeah. Like I regret. I had like 5 minutes of regret where I was like, did it make sense? And then like, I had such a good time playing TI and seeing all my friends in person. It was very clear to me that I made the right call, you know?
So what you're saying is there's no lessons to learn from these losses.
No, I'm not saying that. I do think third is good. I'm happy with third.
I'm glad to hear that.
You know, well, it's about setting realistic expectations. I mean, like, I think, like, if I, like, you know, it's funny. I was talking to, like, who was I? I was talking to someone in the Nisei testing Discord about this. And they were like, seriously, they said this, I think they said this seriously, at least. They said, don't you go into, like, pretty much every game thinking you're going to win? And, like, oh, we talked about this last week, but no, I mean, one of the things that, like, I'm trying to work on is, like, being, like, satisfied with results that aren't, like, the best.
Yeah.
And so I think third is, like, pretty insane, actually. When you look at the field and, like, you look at everything.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think also, like, it's sort of like when you talk a lot of shit, you have to, like, put in, like, the results to keep talking shit. And I think third is, like, a good enough result that I can still talk shit about Netrunner.
I think so. I'm giving you a talking shit pass.
Yeah, I got the talk shit pass. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. I have the authority to give those out, so you have one. congratulations. Taking these unfamiliar decks, is that something you'd do again? Or do you think, like, looking back, it would have been better to just be on these decks you're comfortable with? Doubly so because you were going to do TI at the same time.
I mean, like, so the way I felt about it was, like, I didn't really have a lot of regrets. So, like, the Freedom deck I was really comfortable on, but I just knew it wasn't going to be a good meta call. Like, I just knew it was going to have a lot of bad matchups. The 8 Pakashika list, honestly, to me, felt, like, really comfortable. I felt really good. Like, that was one of those things where, like, not only is a good list, but, like, I just feel really comfortable on it. There isn't a lot in the meta right now that I would feel, like, say I'm comfortable on. In the past, it's been lists like... Like, I just think a lot of, like, the things I enjoy playing right now are getting shit on by Criminal.
Yeah.
And so it's hard, like, I don't really have, like, a quote, like, if I had to say it'd be Argus, like, I'd be playing, like, if it was, like, if I had a quote deck that I would have been, like, I want to play this, it would have been Argus, but I just think Argus is, like, not cutting it right now. And I don't really like playing the outfit that much. And so, like, it's frustrating me that, in some sense, on the corp side, like, the Ace of decks, in my mind, are just very powerful.
Yep.
But I just don't think I'm very good at playing them. And I don't know necessarily if I want to put, like, the hours and hours of practice it would take in to be good at it when I can just play, like, Titan or something. So, basically, like, I would not advise... Like, I usually don't take, like, an unknown corp deck to, like, tournaments, but I just think in this meta there isn't a lot of stuff that, like, is really exciting.
Yeah, I can see that. I have the same problem with Runner a lot of the time. I just... Very middling on a lot of choices.
One of the things I did like about... this tournament was Labs was in the cut, and so he's like from Germany. He's a New World Order player.
He's a good one. I enjoy his memes.
His memes are so good. We had like a private Discord thing, and like he was posting memes in there between every round.
Oh,
it was
sick.
So funny. Oh my God. It was like we had a fucking like a hookup straight. It was like memes.
No. Memes scrape direct those up. Straight. Distill them. I need to inject them into my veins. Right in the eyeballs.
Right in the eyeballs. No, it was good. And, like, we played together. We played against each other in the cut. And it was a good game. Like, it was sort of like... It was just like... I don't know. I would consider us friends. I think it was a very friendly game. And, like, just lots of joking and take backs. And, like, I kind of like those games. There's this threshold you cross when it's, like, two... excellent players. It's like when two like really good players are playing each other, the game can get kind of brisk and like, you know, everyone's focusing and everyone's trying the hardest and like the pressure's there. And I think when you like sometimes when two excellent players meet, it boils over and it just becomes like sort of like a joke fest and memes and like people really having fun. And that's what I felt about my game with Lab. It was so fun. And it was like just a fun game and it was close at the end. So yeah, that was positive.
There may be a horseshoe effect here where that also happens at the really low tables or when two really bad players are playing each other. It also becomes a joke.
It's been a month since APAC, right?
Yeah.
Well,
what a whirlwind.
Is it a month? No. Because it was one
big tournament a weekend. So like last weekend would have been the fourth in the row. So yeah, a month.
Hmm.
It's a lot of Mariner taken. Do you think the meta is stabilized?
No, I don't think so. I think the court decks will remain relatively unchanged, but I think what runners people decide to bring to the table will change.
Yeah.
I think Asa has now reached what I like to call it's so good you play it even if it's hated out status.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say that like even if people are bringing like anti-Asa decks, you still bring Asa because Asa's so good.
I can see that.
I think I don't like the Europeans. That's my sort of formal stance. That being said, a couple of them are good, and I was really impressed with Patrick and QVM's and Lab's Polana list. I think that was a really smart meta call.
Yep.
And I think they're sort of trailblazing in some sense, being like, "Hey, actually, like we can play these decks and do well." I don't know if it's good for like a broader meta call, but it's. It was a good call, and it shows people that, like, it's possible. Like, you can play these decks and do well.
I loved seeing it because, yeah, I quite enjoyed Asa before the last ban list there. And, yeah, it just completely disappeared from the landscape, and I was like, well, I guess this sucks now. I'll play something else. But excited to give it a spin again.
I think the Continentals went very well. What about you?
I agree. I mean, in terms of organization and player turnout, just the diversity of decks we saw. The Nisei stream organization, all that's good. And also all these like offshoot streams are just amazing to see.
The two people I want to shout out, well, like there's like, well, I mean, Akira.
Bless the Aki. Tsundere Queen.
Yeah. She just crushed it.
Yep.
Like, she ran every single one of those tournaments, regardless of time zone. She was very polite. She was very nice. She was like a superwoman, like a superhero. It was crazy. I just thought it was the amount of work she put in. And then also, Andre, Francophone boy. He's Francophone, right?
I've heard him speak French on this stream. Is very good, but I feel like maybe he's not Francophone. Maybe he's just lives in Quebec and knows French.
I don't know.
Am I Francophone? I just think, I don't know.
Well, no, I just think, like, maybe this is bad. I just kind of think every white person who lives in Quebec is a Francophone. But maybe that's, like, an accurate picture.
That's totally inaccurate. There's a large segment of Anglophone population in Quebec that at least they feel they constantly get shit on.
Well, what's the definition of Francophone? Just you speak French?
Well, I think it's mostly, like, French as a first language.
Oh, is that true?
I don't know if that's true. Someone fact check us.
Wait a second. I didn't know you spoke French.
Yeah. Perfectly fluent. Maybe is a that little true? Out of practice.
Is French your first language?
It is. Yeah. My English was actually super terrible until I went to high school because I went to like an all French like primary and junior high school.
Is this in Alberta?
Yeah, which is mind-boggling.
What?
Yeah,
what?
Lethbridge, Alberta.
I thought Albertans didn't believe in French.
They don't, but I guess there's a critical mass of French people enough to have a small school.
Well, somewhere in, like, you know, Pierre Trudeau in his grave is shedding a tear.
Yeah, I'm sure he's very happy for Alberta. Yeah. National Energy Program really worked out.
Yeah, after he stole their oil. Okay, so we got we're done with Canadian Politics Corner.
We should bring it back, though. We'll bring it back.
Oh, I mean, I like... It was funny. I was when I brought up on stream the Bond Cop, Bad Cop thing.
Oh, that's so good.
Because, like, I didn't realize it until after, but that is kind of like a deep cut for... Like, all the Canadians were like, oh, yeah,
I understand. No one knows that. I'm shocked you knew that movie, not being...
It's a Canadian treasure! It's a Canadian treasure!
It's a Canadian, like, pretty
good. It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it a treasure.
You know, when I travel abroad, the number one, like, Canadian show that people know, do you know what that... I've traveled abroad a bunch recently for Netrunner tournaments.
Yeah.
And I bring up I'm Canadian, we get talking about Canadian television. What's the number one show that they know from Canada?
The Red Green Show.
No, it's Trailer Park Boys.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
When I was in Europe, a bunch of the Europeans were like, oh, yeah, we love Trailer Park Boys.
I mean, it's pretty good.
Makes sense. It's a documentary first, really. But,
check out the Red Green Show, though. That's pretty wholesome.
I haven't seen that, actually.
Yeah, because you're like 12.
Yeah, that's true.
It's been off the air for 2 decades. That's why I've never heard of it.
Okay. So it was Aki. Andre, yeah, a Francophone boy. He did such an exceptional job.
He casted like the whole thing. Everyone, like, the whole thing. 12-hour streams. It just... How? I don't know. I feel like I like talk this much for 2 hours a day and I'm like, oh, I can't talk anymore. I'm drained. And he just casted the whole thing. Pinpoint analytical skills everywhere. Just calling the plays. It's a fantastic caster. Hats off. Go Andre.
I think like, you know, most commentators in my life I've seen fall into two categories. There's color commentators who like do sort of like play by play.
Yeah.
And then there's analytical commentators who do like sort of like step back and I'm like, okay, what's like, I would consider myself more of an analytical commentator. I'm like, okay, like what's the matchup? Like what are the goals? Like what's the plan? Like what's the big strategy moments? Andre does both.
Yeah. Find an Andre who can do both. And they did.
Like in my mind, like he is in the pantheon of like, you know, like legendary Netrunner content creators. Like he's up there with Dodge Palm now.
Oh yeah.
In my mind.
Yes.
Like he's an untouchable. Like his work was incredible. Yeah, I had so much fun commentating with him. I felt like we had a good, like, like a good back and forth.
A rapport. Which,
a rapport, yeah. Got that the bone one, cop, bad cop.
The one problem I had was that, like, yep. he would stop talking, and then the other casters would start, and I'd be like, you're not as
why
good.
Is it, yeah. yeah. Why is it Andrew? Why is it Andrew? Just, yeah, put on It was, he was so good. He's so nice. But yeah, he's definitely legend status now in my mind. Like, he is in the tier, like, he is.
Yeah, get don't mess with Andre. If you mess with, don't mess Andre, with Andre, you're messing with us.
Yeah. We'll fuck you up. Straight up. He's our guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so good. And then, like, also just, like, Vesper and Austin and, like, Nisei staff that made this all possible were, like, incredible. There weren't any major hiccups. The Intercontinentals format was great.
Like, I know it's a different thing, like, FFG being a business and Nisei being a volunteer organization. It's still mind-boggling that, like, every big FFG event, there'd be, like, some controversy about how it'd be run and, like, how shitty the prizing was. And Nisei, people who don't get paid. So, I mean, it's obviously very different in terms of commitment. But, like, they just, like, knock it out of the park every time. It just boggles my mind. And I know there's a lot of differences there that explain a lot of it, but still, it's just amazing job. Amazing job.
Well, like, Nisei. Yeah. Thank you. It's just, well, it's something that's like, okay, I don't think the continents were, like, literally perfect. I'm willing to forgive, like, especially on the Nisei organized play side, I'm willing to forgive a lot of what I consider mistakes because they're not getting paid. Like, it's not their job. Like, it's a volunteer effort. I would get upset with FFG because it's their job.
Yeah.
You know, like, people are getting, like, paid to do this as a living. So it would frustrate me in some sense. Like, I had, like, one of, like, the... Yeah, so, I mean, we'll save it for... Our next episode is going to be all can the things we hate this? About Nisei.
Yeah.
No, we can't do it now. No. I got a list. Yeah. So there are some things I don't like about Nisei. We got an episode coming up where we're going to put Nisei on blast, you know? Like, so,
top
but, like,
five
I'm willing...
things we don't like about Nisei.
Oh, no, it's got to be hate. It's top five things we hate.
Oh,
we
hate. Oh my God. We're going to make so much money off of this. Oh, yeah, at least exactly. Someone's getting paid. It's not Nisei.
At least someone's getting paid. You know, not that, like, there was any major shakeups, but I do think that, like, you know, when Nisei organized play would do something that I didn't like or that I thought was unprofessional or bad, I would, like, small as it is, I would be willing to forgive it because it's, like, the quality, despite, like, they're not getting paid. It's insane. The level of quality they're doing and not getting paid is nuts.
Oh, it's absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's insane. I thought the prizing structure was good.
Explain that to me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, because, like, I think, like, a problem with tournaments is that, like, okay, so, I'll start off. I'm biased towards having tournament rewards being weighted towards the top end of the, like, performance spectrum because I often perform well. Yeah. So it rewards me when, like, you know, most of the prizing is, like, top third because I usually almost always place top third. But I think the reality is what motivates a lot of people to show up to tournaments is, like, prizing. And I think there is a large amount of people who feel that, like, they can't make top 16, quote unquote. So, like, if all the prizing's in the top 16, what's the point?
Yeah.
One of the things I liked about this was, like, having the Earth Station be top half.
I think it was just the Anansi and the Enigma. I think Earth Station was top 16.
No, I don't know about that one.
Anyways, I agree with the point as a whole because, yeah, you're absolutely right. That gave me a goal of, I know I'm not going to be top 16, but I was like, top half, that's achievable. It wasn't, but it was a good goal.
No, I agree. It was top half. Top 32 was the Earth Station.
Yeah, that's great too. So there was, like, extra graduations there.
Yeah, but the top half is three Enigmas and three Anansis. Yeah. I just think it's good in some sense because it gives, like, a goal for people who are, like, on the lower end of the competitive spectrum because, like, top half is, like, not easy, but achievable, I think, for, like, a lot of people. It's, like, perceived as achievable. You know?
I think if you practice diligently, play good decks, you can make it to the top half.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I like the prizing structure a lot. I do think one of the things, well, we talked about this earlier, one of the takeaways for me is maybe that the tournament structure, the 2-for-1s are outweighing the benefits of the tournament structure, and we can look into a different way to run tournaments. But yeah, it's kind of like that's it for now. The next big tournament is Worlds, I think, because they haven't said anything about Nationals yet, right?
They haven't. So who knows if that's happening? It's always an awkward
timeline.
Well, they canceled regionals, yeah. Right? So that's dead.
That made a lot of sense to me.
Nats could be run. It's going to be online. And the timing is always awkward because the stuff always comes out as Worlds hype is like ramping up. So there's a lot of pressure for people to run Nationals before Worlds. So the buy is for the Worlds this year. And like there's never really enough time to organize people flying in. But obviously that's less of a problem this year. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I think it's a struggle in some sense because, like, it's like you don't – yeah. No, it's just a timing problem. I know for, like, at least for Nationals, like, last year, I went to Worlds and then I played in 2 Nationals.
Yeah.
You know?
Which it should be the other way, right? Like, Nationals should be done. It should be Worlds.
It's like there's a question of, like, does Worlds – like, I don't know. There's a question of, like, does Worlds exist outside of the tournament structure, or is it, like, the finale?
In my mind, it should be the finale, but as it is, it's the other way, right? Because it just happens and everything kind of gels around it because it's the one big event.
I think it's tough because, like, I think it's hard to get people to travel in and around Christmas. So, like, December, January is basically, like, off limits.
Yeah.
I think for big tournaments. I think the way you might change it is to like constrict the store champ season down to like a smaller amount of months. Because right now store champs run like ideally it would be store champs run for 3 months, then regionals run for 3 months, then nationals run for like 3 months, and then worlds like at the end of the national season.
Yeah.
Starting in like February and going until like, so it'd be like what, February? Actually, I don't know. What are the months? What's after February?
March.
Okay. So February, March, April. Yeah. I don't know. It's like the problem. Like, here's the thing about the months. You don't really need to know. You just don't need to know them. It's like
you don't need to know numbers either, but they come in handy once in a while.
No. It's like, okay, when I was in high school, they taught me how to do long division.
Uh huh.
And I was like, this is kind of dumb because like I'll just like look it up on my phone, and like lo and behold, if I need to do like. Like, I never need to do long division in my life. But if I need to, like, do quick math, I'll just, like, whip out the calculator. I feel the same way about the months. Like, it doesn't... Like, as long as you have a vague idea of when each month is in the year, you know,
it's fine.
Can just look it up in
a calendar. Yeah, you're close enough.
Well, we have calendars. It's like, the thing is, like, March and April and May are, like, in spring somewhere. The ordering doesn't matter because I could just, like, go grab my phone and, like, look up the order and be like, oh, okay, this is how many days are in them, and, like, this is where they are.
God damn. I didn't realize you didn't know how time worked. This is so good.
But yeah, so you would do like, okay, so March, April. So February, March, April would be store champ season. May, June, July would be, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what they're doing now.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what they're aiming for. I don't think it was ever formalized really under FFG, and it's still kind of this floating target with Nisei. This year's a wash so hopefully they firm it up. Hey, let's save this for our complaints.
Things
about
we hate about.
Save, because I've got so few things to complain about that I need to cling on to these small, petty complaints.
Oh, me too. Trust me.
Okay. We've been going over an hour here, so I think we could start wrapping it up here. So competitive is mostly past. Are you... You cutting Netrunner cold turkey, going pro in Twilight Imperium?
Yeah, I'm hitting up the pro scene. I've actually been playing a lot of Magic the Gathering recently.
Oh, yuck.
It's a good game, Phil.
I played it when I was like 13, and like people gave me a deck, and we played like the 4-player one.
Commander, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think the problem with Magic... Okay, this is like a whole other discussion. I think the problem with Magic is finance and not the gameplay. I think the gameplay is pretty good. Regardless.
Yeah.
No, I think...
I mean, you would fucking hope the gameplay would be good. Like, if you were like, one of the problems is finance, and the other is gameplay.
Is the game
they
sucks.
Both suck. But that card art, baby. Oh, I can't get enough.
What was I gonna say?
You're playing Magic.
Yeah. So I'm good. Like, I just gotta focus on some life stuff, and like, I'm a little burnt out on Netrunner, and I've kind of just been focusing all my Netrunner energy in the set testing.
Yeah.
We're gonna start testing my champ card pretty soon.
Ooh, very exciting.
I am excited.
Any scoops for the listeners?
I don't know. It's like Nisei might get really mad at me.
Just say a number that's on the card.
Oh,
Do you not know numbers either? Oh, no, come no. On. Learn your months, learn your numbers.
It involves trashing stuff. That's
ooh.
All I gotta say.
Oh, that's okay. That's good. I love it.
That's all I gotta say. That might change. Who knows? Like, it's early days.
We'll assume it won't. And then when it comes out, we'll be up in arms because it's like, oh, this doesn't trash stuff at all. What a ruse.
If Nisei puts a dead horse head in my bed, we know why.
Have you not got one yet?
Well, yeah, but like, I don't know. It's the reminder head. Okay. Thanks for having me on again.
We're gonna get some lovely guests to have you eventually. As a guest.
We'll get some more guests.
Yeah, we'll get some more guests in here at some point. I got a couple people in mind.
Okay. Have a good day, Phil. Thanks.
Yeah,
for
have
me
a
on.
Great one. And we'll see everyone else in 2 weeks.
Yep, two weeks. Yep.
Oh, and you bye. Know what I'm gonna do now? I'm gonna play that Marcus song again. It's so good. It's so good.
Excellent.
All right. See you next time. We have to pretend that we just heard Marcus's song.
Yeah. No, I was already going to do that.